Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hey audio listeners, thank you for listening to Fireteam Chat episode 100. For the first hour and a half, we reference a lot of slideshow images that you can see over at youtube.com/fireteamchat. However, I realize you're an audio listener, so you might want to skip ahead to about 1 hour and 26 minutes, only because you won't have a visual reference. Anyway, thank you so much for being a listener. Here's the show.
Reaching episode 100 of any show is a special moment. Before we begin, I wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone who's been a part of making Fireteam Chat possible through the years. Jose, Alfredo, Brian, Sean, Fran, CJ, thank you so much for being a part of this production. Also, thank you to all the guests who've been kind enough to join us on the show over the last 2 years. Most importantly, thank you to every single one of you who've watched, shared, left comments, and kept the show going. We do this for you, and I hope you've enjoyed the ride as much as we have. Today we'll be talking about our favorite Destiny memories, take a look back at the evolution of the game, talk about what's coming down the road, but first, we'll have a little chat with Deej from Bungie. So without further delay, let's get Fireteam Chat episode 100 started.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat episode 100. Thank you for joining us, and thank you Fran, Sean, CJ also. And one more thanks, and that's for Bungie, Deej, and Chris. How are you guys doing there in Seattle?
Doing good. Congratulations on your 100th episode.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. So today you guys actually brought something really cool for the community. What are you showing us?
Well, we since this is your 100th episode, you know, you're taking a look back at some of your favorite memories. We're delving into the memories of Christopher Barrett, who's going to represent our art team. And we're going to take a look at some of the original explorations that led to the world that we've all been exploring these past several years. We're going to look back at some of the first seeds that were planted here in our studio that grew into the world of Destiny that you know. So we're going to take a look back at concepts and just sort of the artistic primordial ooze, if you will.
Awesome.
Cool.
So let's jump right into it. You have some characters that you wanted to start with?
Yeah. So let's see. First image we have here is a early concept of Titan. Just exploring some of the armor shapes and stuff. I believe that's one of the ones that we built in game. I think that might be the Star Guardian. I'm not sure. We have internal names for
Star Guardian.
I think so, if I remember correctly. But we have internal names for like the different sets to kind of give the artists building them kind of inspiration for the kind of theme they're going for. So it might be like, you know, like Blood Hunter or, you know, Star Guardian.
Just we want to know that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of fun.
Just I'm gonna start calling it the Star Guardian.
That sounds so cool. But also, I'm looking at this and that looks like a really big weapon, or is it two weapons on his back? Because it looks kind of auto rifle-ish. Like the front of it looks like what might be a Suros weapon. And when I say the front, I mean the part that's by his leg. You see what I'm talking about? Am I the only one?
Yeah.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah.
That looks like a Suros weapon, right?
Yeah, yeah, an early idea of a weapon. They also, the Titans, at one point, we were trying to, you know, distinguish, you know, clear ideas of which, what was a hunter, what was a Titan, what was a warlock. So we gave them all distinctive, elements to their armor designs. Like the Titans always have the slope back kind of, you know, faceplate. At one point they had, a lot, like, a piece on their backpack that was more visible, and that's what you see, you know, just so the silhouette was, unique between the different classes.
So how early in the process was this built?
Yeah, like what year is this?
Oh boy.
You know, roughly.
You know, I don't
know. I joined Bungie in November of 2011, and when I first got here, this was about the only way that I could relate to this new product that I knew nothing about. I took a bit of a leap of faith as a longtime Bungie fan, as somebody who would love playing Bungie shooters. I took a leap of faith coming out here, you know, saying, please, please don't be something that I have a hard time relating to. Because, I mean, as the community guy, I was going to have to move among the players and talk to them in a way that made sense to them. And when I started seeing a lot of the art, it, you know, sort of reassured me instantly. It's like, okay, I see power armor, I see guns, I see, you know, I said to Pete Parsons on my first day, this looks like a Bungie game. It's got power armor and guns. And he nodded gravely and said, and capes.
Yep, and capes.
I kind of choked back a chuckle because...
And I saw in the beginning, was it called Project Destiny, or did it have another code name before that?
It was codenamed Tiger.
Yeah, it was Tiger first.
We'll actually get to that in a bit. Space There's Tiger. Actually a slide that explains why we called it Project Tiger in a bit. But let's keep rolling because we got 60 of these.
Yep, yep.
Oh boy. All right, let's go.
This is Cade, isn't it? Cade outfit.
This is Cade?
No way, really?
Wow.
That's so cool.
You know, these are a couple images here just of the class mentors. So, this is a early image, what ultimately became, Cade's outfit.
So you had like the cloak going, but it was a little more, I don't know how to put it. It wasn't as dressed
human?
Up, so to speak.
Right.
Well, he's not a robot either. Yeah. The lights are bright in here.
Yep.
Very cool.
Can you tell me a little bit about this weapon? It looks very staffish.
I'm going back. It looks what?
Like a staff.
Oh yeah, it's just a I think it's just a sniper rifle.
Yep.
Super large sniper rifle.
Oh, you're right. There
you go.
That's awesome.
It is bright in the studio, by the way, for us. So if we ever
got it, so you may recognize this character.
Not quite sure. No, it's Zavala, right?
Yeah, that's Zavala.
Is it?
Yeah.
The shoulder pads.
Yeah, totally. The shoulder gives it away.
The armor,
the gigantic shoulder pads.
Yep.
What I love is that you can kind of distinguish the Titans. A lot of Titan armor has sort of like, not balanced. Like there's parts that are on one side, but aren't like this shoulder pad. Like, has that always been a design element of the Titans?
I mean, I think that's something we tried to do across the board with most of the characters. Like, we wanted to play with asymmetry and make sure that, you know, we didn't just have sort of generic sort of, you know, suits of armor that, you know, it was part of the Destiny aesthetic, I guess, to introduce those elements of, you know, like the sash that goes across one side, or, you know, arm pieces that, we're only on one side, like you're saying. So, I think it kind of goes across all of our armor designs for the different classes.
Now, within the concept of like ornaments and stuff that you guys just brought in the latest DLC, did you want to do that sooner, or were there other ideas where you're like, oh, you know, maybe we could implement this another way, or you just always came out with different gear prior to that?
I'm trying to think. I mean, we've always, you know, it's been a progress, you know, throughout each release, like playing with different things that we would introduce. Early ideas for the characters, we wanted to have those elements that were unique and stood out and made each character different, and, you know, having pieces that people could wear that made them stand out. I think that was part of the, you know, early idea of Destiny was, you know, having those ways to look unique as a character. So
one last question about the Titan and the Hunter, actually, like, which iteration of Zavala and Cade is this?
Oh yeah. Like, how many of these did you do?
You know what? As you can see, Ryan Demita, he was the artist who worked on these. I think at that point we had a pretty good understanding of the aesthetic for the different classes. Like with anything, we'd go through a couple rounds of sketches, and I think he pretty quickly found something that we really liked. So not too many, I would say, with those characters.
Okay.
There were some characters that went through a lot of iterations, and we may, you know, we'll get to a couple of those, that you'll see, like, you know, some characters, some of the more iconic characters took maybe, you know, 6 months, a year to kind of finally get right. But yeah, these came about pretty quickly.
Cool.
So I'll move on. So here you see some of the very, very, very early, first images from, some of the classes. So here you have an early Titan. Cool.
That is a minigun.
Like.
Yeah.
Fits with the name Titan, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
So
that's so cool. Here. Where are the miniguns in this, in Destiny?
The Cabal have them, I guess. Right?
That's, oh, okay. Yeah, that's very similar.
Yep. So, I mean, here just playing around with, you know, making sure the classes kind of fit that fantasy. So you have a very heavy, you know, space marine, basically. I think that embodies this, you know, image pretty well. But also something that we wanted to bring early in the concepts was that kind of painterly quality, like, you know, bringing that kind of more impressionistic quality to the world of Destiny. So, you know, the colors and the, you know, stuff was a little bit softer and a little more impressionistic. And so that was really important in the early, early concept phase of Destiny. This wasn't just, you know, super hard sci-fi. We wanted some of that more painterly quality to all of the work we did. And I think, Jamie Jones, the artist who worked on this, is amazing at that.
And just a note on process, especially for your audience, when we look back into concepting, this is the raw space. This is somebody comes to a blank piece of paper or a blank design tablet, mm-hmm. and they're told to come up with the first ideas that will end up growing into iconic classes. So way mm-hmm. before sandbox designers got their hands on this to decide about things like weapon balance and things like that, these were literally just sort of sketches of weapons and soldiers or knights, if you will, mm-hmm. just from the blank of someone's imagination. So you can look at this and you can see the original inspirations, but this really isn't a matter of where are the miniguns, or if we go to this next image, it's like, what happened to that pistol? This is right. really where we mm-hmm. begin, and then we move from here and refine these ideas. And as more and more disciplines sound off about what they need for Destiny to be, the game really does change over time. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I was kind of just joking about the miniguns.
I know, but cool I said for your audience, because I can imagine thousands of voices going, "Yeah, where's the miniguns, Bungie?"
Right. Yeah.
So one thing that stood out to me about this screenshot and the last screenshot was like when you're approaching, like you said, the blank canvas, and you're kind of coming up with these ideas. That last screenshot of the Titan, it looked a little bit, I wouldn't call it contemporary in terms of modern times, but like it had kind of tubes going in and out of the back that suggest a less evolved sci-fi aesthetic. Was it difficult to kind of place it in how far in the future, how evolved are these armor sets, are these weapons? Because that last screenshot feels a little bit more Iron Man-y, which in our heads is like, that's happening now. This looks like, that doesn't even look like armor to me, minus the gun. It mm-hmm. could be... It less totally cool. could be contemporary. Like, was it difficult to balance like the future aesthetic and the sci-fi aesthetic and figuring out where it kind of happens in time?
I mean, you really hit on one of the challenges, you know, early when we were working on, the world of Destiny was, we wanted to make it timeless, I think. So we didn't want to like really make it clearly a, you know, super futuristic or, you know, something in the past. Like if it feels timeless, that was a good thing for us. So taking bits of things that are contemporary that people can relate to and mixing in sort of the sci-fi and the fantasy as you see, you know, in the spectrum. And so, I think the classes even kind of represent that where you have the Warlock who is more fantasy, all the way, you know, the Titan on the other end of the spectrum, which is, more sci-fi, more space marine, and then the Hunter somewhere in the middle mm-hmm. where you have a mix of kind of armor and cloth and capes and guns and that kind of thing. So, we wanted to kind of have that spectrum.
I'm actually curious about Bungie's process here. And maybe you do both, but like in some cases, like concept art just kind of comes out of, I think, brainstorming to inspire maybe design. But like here, obviously we're seeing specifics, but in other words, how much direction did you have for some of this early work? You know, did you know it was a 3-class co-op game, shooter? And how much direction would you say was provided early on? How do you guys tend to work? You know, how much of the game was designed up in your head before you're making art?
Right. I mean, it was gradual. I mean, we worked on it for many, many years. And so, you know, it was a small team and we worked tight together. And so the process of the design and the art all kind of happened together. And so I would say at this point in the concepts, we knew that we wanted to have, you know, classes. We wanted them to be a mixture of sci-fi and fantasy. And that's what, the, you know, when we wanted to have, you know, and we did a lot of sketches up to this point, and this was really trying to nail the look and give a finished piece that could inspire the team and that ultimately would use as a, you know, a checkpoint for us to, you know, yeah. say, hey, that cool. works. We've kind of hit the aesthetic and, you know, that we're going for.
I want that helmet.
So it sounds like, just for some clarity, it sounds like you do make a lot of art before you really get into the engine at all. Like,
oh yeah, yeah. Especially right? in, the, I mean, with a new franchise, a new, you know, a new world that we're building. Absolutely, that's the, you know, we want to explore as many things as possible, you know, as early as possible. And you know, it's much quicker to, you know, do a sketch or, you know, prove out something on paper than it is to build it in 3D and get it in engine. At the same time, though, we're also doing, you know, stuff in engine and exploring things and with gameplay and whatnot while we were doing some of this. But
gotcha. So was it always Hunter, Warlock, Titan, or did something hit the cutting room floor that didn't make it?
I mean, we went through a lot of iterations. I think, you know, if you go look back at our old, you know, notebooks of different ideas of, you know, what could be in the game, there's plenty of stuff that we played around with. But very quickly, I think we knew that, you know, three felt right. And those were the fantasy, the sci-fi fantasies that felt really good to us. You know, they felt like they complemented each other well.
Yeah. When I first got here, I mean, they said, you got the tank, you got the wizard, you got the sort of the rogue frontier survivalist. That was one of the things, actually, this early concept that's next up for the hunter, this is sort of devoid of one of my favorite things about the hunter, where it kind of feels like hunter armor is cobbled together using found items like old hazmat suits or little pieces from astronaut suits, and that's why the asymmetrical Porsche component to the armor really appealed to me, because it's like, you didn't find this hanging up in a locker somewhere. This wasn't gifted to you by the Queen. You, just like the players of Destiny, find this from all these different sources and cobble it together, and that's why every, you know, warrior in the world is unique, right?
Yep. But it's that exploring the frontier fantasy and finding the armor from lost heroes and, you know, putting it together and everyone being unique. Absolutely. That was part of the aesthetic. Yeah. This was actually before, hunters had the full cape. You see a sash, you know, the sort of scarf, on here. I mean, which you get actually in the beginning of the game, you get a, when you first create a hunter, you get the, you know.
Yeah. Shorter, isn't that the default?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that an arc blade there? It's almost,
prototype,
even that far back, people were thinking about luminous energy blades and.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a lot of, you know, these are cool images, but a lot of the choices that go in here are very deliberate about, how much cloth and, you know, what the style of helmet and whether, you know, in this world, are there glowing, you know, knives that people can wield, and how much is the right amount of fantasy versus contemporary versus sci-fi. So, those are all fun things that, you know, we're working out at that point. Moving along, let's see. Here we have some, what'd you call it, the ho-hum?
That's what this file name was, Ho-Hum Soldiers. And I just love this because we always see the Guardians sort of strolling nobly through the tower or engaged in amazing action. But it's funny that this artist, Jamie Jones, took the time to think about just sort of like the life of a soldier. Like, I wish someone would attack us today. I haven't fired a shot in anger in over a month. And you start to see some of the first ideas of what city life would be, if that's supposed to be, you know, like the wall and the towers in the background, or if that's, you know, a far-flung destination. But you can see how raw the thinking was here. You know, there's guns and magazines in the forefront. You've got something that looks very M4 there. And it's just where Destiny arrived is a very iconic and specific blend of sci-fi and fantasy, but you can kind of see that this far back in the process, the artists were all over the map. There were some things that looked like it was very near future in almost like a Halo sense, and there were other things that were totally like off the reservation into Lord of the Rings territory, right?
Yeah, like the weapons there, those are just machine guns.
Yeah,
so
it looks pretty contemporary, minus like this jetpacky armor that the standing dude is. But like the helmet of the sitting dude, like that looks like something like a fighter pilot from today like might wear, you know?
Yep.
Jet pilot, yeah.
Yeah.
Guardians on watch. You can see it though.
Yep. Yeah. And some of the other things were, I mean, in these kind of images, like we're also looking at the color palette and the style of the way the city feels and the distance and the atmosphere. And so it's sort of setting the tone as well as the specifics of the designs.
Yeah. I was going to say, even though it looks like ground level, it still seems to have a lot of that tower feel. It seems very similar.
Meaning, oh, you read that it's ground level? It looks like they're standing on the top of a building.
Oh, yeah, top, but meaning it's all looks like it's on the ground. Flat. It doesn't, because there's the wall in the background, meaning this still feels like
the tower.
Aesthetic of waiting at the tower on watch for the next thing, meaning finding a place for these guardians to live, but meaning it looks very similar to me. Like, at a glance, it has that haziness that you're talking about, you know, in the
distance. It looks like Earth.
And yeah, it looks like Earth still, you know, which
I mean,
is,
it's Tower, the city.
Exactly. Yeah.
He just rolled another, unfortunate Engram from the Cryptarch.
Yeah. Those are all greens.
Exactly.
Why do I keep getting green?
He got a blue.
Yeah. He met Master Raul a few minutes ago, unfortunately.
Shinjin E again, and they told me this won't carry forward from the beta.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, awesome. Moving on.
We got
on.
A green
again,
guys.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Ooh, oh, this like one's this. Classic. Oh,
wow. Yeah, one of the first images of the Awoken.
Yeah.
So really trying to get a sense of the, you know, space vampire. I think at that point we were trying to go for, like, what a space, you know, space elves, space vampires. How do they feel? You know, blue glowing skin and kind of, you know, white iridescent hair, that kind of thing.
Did you just say how do space elf vampires feel?
Yeah.
that
was the original direction. Like, can, you know, just exploring that idea, space elf vampires, I think. Yeah.
But actually, I do see, like,
but how do they feel, Fran? How do they feel?
Just a normal conversation, Fran.
I'm getting a lot of emotion from her.
And how do you feel when you create one for yourself? This is going to define
exactly.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is beautiful, though.
I love this art. Yeah. Like, yeah. Personally, like the Awoken aesthetic in the game, I'm like, you know, but this looks so cool. Like, I get the elf vibe also kind of weirdly, the vampire vibe as well.
Yeah, yep. I am, Awoken was my first, class for Warlock and like, yeah, it is my favorite design of all of them probably. I don't know. There's something about the feeling. Yeah, when you mentioned Lord of the Rings, like I could see a little bit of that. You know, the inspiration.
I like the wispy hair.
Well, fantasy is probably the better word. You can see the fantasy in the Awoken.
Yeah.
This is really cool art.
Chris, did this come out about the same time as when you guys were releasing, like, the Exo sitting in the corner covered in oil or alien guts or whatever?
Yeah, I think that was around the same time. We wanted to make sure that, like, as with the classes, how there's a clear, distinct fantasy for each one of the classes, whether it's a, you know, tough, space, you know, space knight kind of thing, or, you know, the space marine versus the, versus the space wizard. The races, the player races were also just important to have very clear fantasies that, that whether you're human, whether you're exotic and sort of a, something that's like an elf or, a vampire, that comes from beyond and is unknown, sort of magical, mystical, and then the very, very hard sci-fi kind of, robot exo.
And this next Awoken concept pulls it in, I think, a little closer to home. This next vision is Clicker Go.
Clicker Go. Clicker
click
not work.
Clicker Go. There you go.
Too many spoilers.
No.
Spoilers. We're still in Awoken territory, though.
Shield your eyes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, nice. I haven't seen that before.
Oh, that, talking about that painterly aesthetic for sure.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Is it, had they always, have, do all the Awoken designs, like, do they have, like, in most of them, it seems like the eyeballs, like the, what's the colored part of your eye? The cornea? I can't remember.
No. Iris. Yeah.
The iris. Yeah. Like, they seem translucent. Here, they're very clearly like a nice blue.
Yeah.
Has that changed? Has it always been like that?
I think we've always wanted them to be kind of glowy, you know, kind of help them be self-illuminated, and then have variety of color choices, you know, within. So magical eyes, I guess, kind of like any space elf vampire should have.
Yeah.
So next you see a familiar character, I think.
Queen, right?
Queen.
Yeah. Rip.
Well, we're not sure about that, Des.
Yeah.
Never know.
What's your name? Something Sarah?
Yeah, this.
A queen.
Marisol.
Marisol.
Marisol. There you go.
Do you know if the Awoken, yeah, was it always rooted in like this, it's a little more dark and gothic, you know, the queen, was it always that angle? You know, I don't know if we're going to see anything else with the Awoken, but right now it's been, yeah, sort of the female vampire, you know, goth, so to speak.
Yeah, a little, I mean, it's always been a little bit of that. The Awoken were meant more to just be sort of alien and magical and otherworldly. The story of the queen, however, and the you know, the Awoken who, you know, her story was about her kind of ruling over this group of, you know, beasts, basically the Fallen. So having to, you know, come to power through, you know, taking control of you know, Fallen and using them, you know, to sort of take over the reef, and that was sort of her hand in of power. So that's sort of the story of the Queen. But they woke in, and you know, their true story and all of that, you know, is much more just trying to play on the fantasy of the, you know, magical alien race. So
very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was speaking about concepts about how long some of these took to kind of get right. And, you know, we're talking about Zavala, for example. The Queen was one of those characters who I would say maybe went through 100 different, you know, costume designs and trying different. Oh, how much is she like a, you know, like a queen and something more regal and wearing a full, you know, gown for, you know, or, you know, some that went much more about her as a warrior. And I think we, you know, ended up more on the outlaw kind of pirate, but still, you know, very iconic. And so I think we hit a nice, you know, in between there where she feels like someone who would rule the reef, but also, you know, there's a, you know, she still has that Awoken side to her. So,
yep. Now, these are some great, like, visuals. Do you guys ever get to a point where you want to see them physically? I know a lot of people like kit bashing and do that other stuff where they make them. Do you guys do that and implement that to actually see it 360?
Yeah. I mean, and, yeah.
You mean in like physical model, like actual or in game models?
Like we like definitely physical model, yeah.
Like we do, I mean, we do a lot of, at this point in, you know, in game and in engine, like trying different looks and stuff to see how it feels three dimensionally. We actually have done, you know, built some, toys and stuff like that. Yep. That, you know, there's a, limited edition one we did for the studio of the Queen.
Yeah.
But
it's not part of our creative process.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of sculpture at Bungie. There are some things on display inside of our studio that people have sculpted. And I know some of our artists, right when I got here, went out and actually took a sculpting class just so they could learn to sort of conceive different types of anatomy or create different characters and think three-dimensionally, get away from the sketch pad, get away from the, you know,
right,
the design tablet, and actually use their hands to create something in 3D space. But we don't tend to create figurines or models. Usually it goes right from the concepting into the 3D design space.
Right.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
It would be cool, though, if we had a shelf around here full of, you know, like
all the main characters
that we've been able to dream up.
Yep.
I say we very generously to myself right there.
Yeah, because we've seen, when you see them in person, it's crazy the detail that you get a chance when, you know, you're holding them.
Who did this one, Chris?
It's just an early, early sketch of, you know, a quick sketch of the Queen's Guard. So this is what, kind of, you know, Petrovenge, or you see a lot of these characters laying, I think they're, have been killed at the beginning of the House of Wolves prologue. Mm-hmm. So these are the Queen's Guard.
Can I ask a quick question about emblems and insignias? Now, I'm starting to see they're being used on some. Like, is that designed separately, or did some of these just kind of show up on, like, the Titan had, I forget which insignia it was there, but yeah, the mark.
Yeah.
Like, did that already exist, and then it gets put on them, and is that a completely different design process?
I would say it's both. Like, sometimes, for example, the Queen's emblem, that was something that was designed prior to this, you know, that... you know, we knew we wanted these different factions of power in the Destiny world, and we wanted to make sure that they had banners and flags and emblems and things we could use in the UI itself for the game. And so,
right.
You know, we did a lot of the early work on designing a whole suite of logos and emblems, like the different class, you know, the different class emblems and Future War Cult and New Monarchy and that stuff. We had those designed, and I think T-shirts and stuff like. Before we'd even announced the game, and so we were wearing those around the studio.
There were players in our community who connected to Destiny before it was ever revealed officially, because we had filed trademarks New Monarchy, yeah. Future War Cult, and Dead Orbit, and people, like, faction lines were being drawn on our forum and in our community before people had even seen the game. We had people who were, like, veteran members of our community, mythic members on Bungie.net, saying, Dead Orbit is the best Orbit. It's like, you don't even know what you're talking about yet. Yeah. All you know is that's you like accurate, black though. More than red.
Exactly. Yeah, they were right, Dead Orbit. Right, Deej?
Yeah, Dead Orbit.
New Monarchy for life.
You don't gotta, I like you're to gonna, ask you guys you every time I visit.
But I mean, also when it comes down to there's a lot of times where one of the concept artists or, you know, are designing a piece of armor or a piece of gear, and they will also, you know, create an emblem or create something specific to that exotic piece or that specific cape. So it kind of goes both ways. But, you know, it's something we very early knew that symbology and these crests and symbols were going to be really important for Destiny just because we wanted that, you know, that mythical kind of, you know, fantasy-like nature that, you know, comes from, you know, great things like, you know, heroes having the coat of arms on their shield and stuff like that. That was going to be super important. So we did a lot of work.
Or even going to Cosmodrome and seeing insignias from, a now defunct Russian space agency and things like that.
Yep.
It's so much. I remember, Joe Cross putting a lot of work even into signage in the world art. So as you moved your way through these spaces, there were like danger signs or elevator signs or just to make it feel like this is a place where people lived and worked and needed directions on how to get over there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
You brought up the factions. When I visit you guys, I always ask you about Seven Seraphs. I have one of the shirts you gave us when we did the IGN first. At what point did you realize like, okay, we can't have all the factions that we pitched and you scale back a little bit?
Well, some of that stuff wasn't even factions. It was just devices in the game, like we were saying with, you know, like the Russian Space Agency or, you know, the Seven Seraphs was a design element that we created. Really, you know that as like the war mines now, you know, things like Rescue,
okay. Oh,
you
awesome.
Know, and don't expect for there to be seven of them. Again, this is just sort of our exploration.
No, it's literal.
You got to stop bringing this up, Destin. Every time I talk to you, you want to know about the Seven Seraphs. You're going to have to, let go.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we knew we wanted to fill the Destiny universe with a lot of different ideas and characters. And so we did a lot of exploration about what those could be. But ultimately, like when it came down to, you know, what are the factions we want to be represented in the tower and what ones are important? You know, we certainly picked from within that early exploration. So,
yeah.
So this almost looks like it's in engine.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, that's, you know, it's super, super cool concept that Jamie
just
did.
The Stranger.
Basically an exo, exploring what I think this was the first one that really, I think solidified kind of the look of the exo and the face, and brought all of the elements together of the exo, mm-hmm. exo characters, that they would have, you know, interesting decals similar to tattoos on a human might have, but they decorate their heads with, different colored decals and stuff.
I have a design question for you. If the exos are like an AI machine race, why does this one or any of them have either masculine or feminine features?
Sure. So,
like, how do you tackle something like that?
Yeah. I mean, when it came down to like players creating a character, we wanted to make sure that they could create something that they like liked and identified with. So it was less about the science of it than it was like, hey, I want to be able to choose, you know, what gender I want to be and whether I want to be in a robot or a space alien or those kind of things. So, a natural choice for just kind of have that whole spectrum, for us.
Yeah.
These are kind of, war machines that have, consciousness, human or, well, consciousnesses downloaded into them, I guess is the lore there. But, we just wanted to have those choices for people building a character. We're also exploring, as you can see in the next one, just different variations of the
cool.
faces.
That's super cool.
Exos don't have hair, so we wanted to find things that were equivalent to hair that you could play around with when you were creating your character. So different fins or different attachments that could work, in the facial creator.
Like how it's like the armor has its own face. Like there's like another set of eyes on the top of the set of eyes. It's a certain kind of design.
The most philosophical thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's cool though.
We must go deeper.
I mean, in the same way, you know, talking about like, you know, how does the, you know, character, you know, gender, for example, here, like, you know, why does a robot need a mouth? Is this something we also, you know, we're exploring? They really don't. Like, it could just be a speaker or whatever. But we wanted to make sure that there was, you know, when they were in a cinematic or a cutscene, that they could actually emote and have, you know, personality. And so we built the mouth to have, you know, some amount of motion. And there's a glowing light when they talk, but it also moves a little bit so that they could express themselves and show, you know, if they were sad or angry or that kind of thing. So that was something we worked out, you know, early in the designs. So here's another. This is an earlier concept, similar to the one before, but this is just playing around with different permutations of exo helmets. You know, exo faces, whether they had different tattoos or broken chunks or fins, that kind of thing. So we could make sure there was enough personality and, you know, cool.
It reminds me of Chappie. When did that movie come out?
Way later. Yeah.
Are you sure?
The one on the far left, that kind of almost made it in the final game, the spiky head option, correct?
Yep. I think there's a is there a damaged piece?
There is a damaged piece.
There's the damaged piece too.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, this seemed like it translated fairly directly, so, yeah.
Very cool.
And now on to the bad guys.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, yes. All right.
So we've clustered these together in the order in which you meet them in the game, so we can kind of recreate our journey through the gamut of alien baddies that you encounter in Destiny. Obviously, up first are the Four-Eyed Fallen.
Yep. This is the first sketch, you know, where we're really nailing the shape of the helmet and the head for the Fallen. So you see some, you know, line sketches around from different angles, and then the kind of iconic downward kind of horn feel and the stripe on the helmet from the, you know, from the more finished sketch there.
When you see that from a profile perspective, the mask is it's really interesting visually. Why would you decide to alter it? Like, what? Why do you decide, okay, that's not going to work? Is it a gameplay decision or?
You know, a lot of different things. You know, along the way can happen. Whether it's something, you know, when it's being modeled, you know, we may make some different choices for, you know, whether it's, you know, poly count or whether it's. You know, once you finally see it with real textures and real geometry, you may just want to adjust it to be more readable from a distance. For example, if something's too detailed, you know, we want to make sure, you know, that when players are playing, normally things are on the screen. You know, there's a certain amount of number of pixels that they're when they're actually, you know, aiming a gun. And so we may make adjustments to the readability of the shapes and the characters so that it reads well at a distance and stuff like that. So. Yeah, there's a lot of different factors that go into it.
That profile study is actually pretty well represented in your next concept. And you can see also, even that far back, the Fallen always had their trusty servitors.
Yep. Yeah, this is the first concept with a servitor and kind of the, you know, the asymmetrical and the robes, sorry, the cloth, like a lot of tattered cloth, really trying to sell them as these scavengers that were out patrolling in their pirate ships and, you know, scavenging for loot.
The loss of nobility is my favorite thing about
The
Fallen. You know, the fact that they might be traveling around in these dilapidated ships, but, you know, they still think they're better than you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, those are the coolest part for me, that story of the, you know, the Fallen were once these great houses and they still, you know, allied themselves to them and called them, you know, had the House of Wolves or the House of Devils.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a really cool backstory. I think that was super fun to play with from an art perspective. But yeah, that they were scattered to the stars and now we're, you know, roaming, you know, looking for loot. It's a fun backstory.
They are very ominous looking. Of all the enemies, I think they're the most ominous looking, right?
Personally. They look cool.
Here you have the first image of the catch, the Fallen catch.
Oh. Yes.
That's awesome.
The Fallen Walker disembarking in the distance.
Yep.
That's so cool.
Wow, I haven't seen this one before. That's really, really awesome.
You wanted unreleased concept art.
So there you go. Yep.
We scraped and clawed.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, when we were talking about Destiny a long time before it came out, I always heard a lot of, like, you know, Star Wars meets Halo meets, you know, whatever. Everyone had their own theories. I heard Star Wars a lot, but I was going to say, looking through the art, I didn't really see as much in that as I did maybe in, well, really just your past works, as well as, you know, I saw a little bit of maybe, like you said, the fantasy of something like Lord of the Rings. This one does have a little bit of that Tatooine. And
yeah, I was going to say.
So I like, though, that it has that, you know, it does deliver a little bit of that. You know, you get that sense of the future, but desolate future as well. But it's really, really cool ship design, basically.
Yeah, it was important that the fallen ship specifically, like, felt sleek and fast and, like, something that was a pirate would want, that would, you know, get in and, like, you know, take over a big, you know, and, you know, be able to outrun anything in the galaxy. And that's why, you know, having that huge engine on one side and the, you know, the sleek, narrow, you know, bow, I think was, you know, kind of.
Do you guys, I was gonna say, and I don't know if that came from Bungie originally, but do you guys ever work with, like, hey, we love these things, you know, these worlds like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars and Halo and et cetera. And was that any of the just artists say, hey, you know, do you like that? Or do you let them draw on their own inspirations and try not to, to say, hey, we want to draw from a little bit of this and that with originality, obviously?
I mean, definitely both. I think that we start with a foundation. So when we're coming up with the art direction, and, you know, early on, it's, you know, more of all over the place. But we kind of narrow in and have specific references, whether it's, you know, fine artists or movies or books and stuff that we will use as a constant touch point when we're talking to the artists or talking to anyone about the designs. So we have that common language, but each individual artist, and that's what's great, like the concept artists bring their own excitement and interpretation and bring their own references and, you know, and bring their own elements to it. So it's a very collaborative process.
Cultural influences too.
Yeah. Like
Joe Cross has talked about the fact that Aris Morn was deeply inspired for him by ninjas. So it's not necessarily somebody coming into a room and saying, okay, everybody, show me Star Wars meets Lord of the Rings. They draw from, you know, anything, whether it's real world or something they only read about and had to picture in their mind, or, you know, it's just this big, huge stew of different inspirations and different influences. And when I first arrived, I got to just go into all the directories, and as a Bungie fanboy, to look through pages and pages of, like, resource material, you know, or, you know, to see, you know, there's, like, subreddits where people do nothing but post pictures of abandoned buildings because they look beautiful in their decay. And that stuff was being emailed around the studio, because we were definitely thinking about, how do you do this thing where you build, I'm getting ahead of us here, how do you build a world that is in decay but still beautiful, you know, where nature is ascendant over man? And they were really sort of going through those explorations right when I arrived and got to sort of collectively eavesdrop on the entire group, which was fascinating for me. But we'll touch on that again when we get deeper into the world art, as we still have more fallen concepts to look at.
Oh. Here's a, I don't like this one. It smells too creepy.
Scary.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is kind of playing up a little bit of the spider mandible, kind of, you know, the four-eyed
predator kinda angle.
Terrifying.
Yeah. I hate spiders.
But yeah, this is a this was the final kind of face study that we settled on. Yeah.
Face and face mask.
Yep.
Yep.
Cool. It's cool.
I was going to make reference to the previous image, but with this one as well, I'm assuming it might have been a fallen standing in front of the ship there. It's really awesome to see just that sense of scale and size of the catch versus it. And I think there's probably no better level than in Venus there, when you actually are, you see it as you come around that corner and you're like, I wonder if I can go in this. And then you can, and you're like, no way. And it turned into this, yeah, there's some crazy moments where you kind of see that sense of scale play out in the game.
Yep. This is just another version of the...
That's better. So is that what they look like when the mask's off?
Yes.
Once upon a time, long, long ago. And, yeah.
Cool. So now switching over to our other favorites, the Vex.
Look at that. That's old.
This is, the very, wow. very, I would say the first sketch that kind of captured the Vex. So this is, the idea of these endless marching machines that never stop, that have the kind of glowing eye in the center and these big, almost, I don't know, dinosaur-like, fins for heads. Just trying to really come up with something that was a unique silhouette that would stand out from the other races. I think that one has a tail. Yeah, that was the one on the left.
Yeah, I was going to say, it makes it very kind of like alien-esque.
Yeah.
Chris, this is pretty different from the other concept art that you did, that you showed us. Why did you decide to do it in this fashion versus just like with a pencil?
I think at this point, I was just doing a lot of sketches with just like a quick brush stroke kind of pen style, just because I wanted to flesh out the sort of gesture of something, just to get the overall shapes. And most of my, I tend to work more sketchy, personally, just to kind of get across a quick idea. Some of the other concept artists are really, really good at, painting things out and finishing them, but I tend to work more, loosely, just to get across the kind of sketchy ideas. Do a lot of different ideas quickly. I think is kind of how I tend to work.
And, so cool.
And then you'll see. This is another one that has.
What is that in the background?
Yeah,
it's like a little bit like a little bit like an ogre almost, but
it gives high. Like you were just talking about that sense of scale, right? Like that looks like Shadow of the Colossus, like size going on there.
That's the beauty of concepting. Anything goes. Early musings, just let your brain stretch out in every direction. At the end of the day, we still need to make a video game where a person goes in and shoots things. So this all serves that in helping us to understand the world and where we might go and where these things might come from that we may never go. But it just helps us understand these characters from every single dimension and every single angle.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time,
you went pretty
also
big. Oryx was big.
Yeah. Oryx was big.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, in terms of, again, like material that you had to work with around this time, like did you know then that it was, Venus and Mars, and or did you not even get there yet? And likewise, did you know they were time travelers and stuff like that? Or
we knew we wanted Destiny to be in the solar system. Again, I'm using the word we very, very generally, generously, but I'm sort of speaking for people that are upstairs. But, we wanted Destiny to be relatable. You're not far flung on the other side of the galaxy the way you were, say, in Halo.
Yep.
It's, and that was one of the things that excited me as a fan when I first came here, is that would be awesome. Like, we're going to go to Mars, we're going to go to Venus. I mean, these are things where if you grow up reading old Robert Heinlein novels, you think about going there and fighting there, and then reading those novels with a 1990s sensibility, you're like, you can't breathe on Venus. So it's like, all right, let's, let's see what Bungie does with these worlds now.
Yep. I think very early, before any concepts were done at all about the Vex, like we had written down on a whiteboard time traveling robots. So, that was the, when we were looking at what would be the kind of, combatants, like enemies that we want to fight in this world, it was like,
spider pirates
that are, spider pirates, empire, destroying or sun destroying empire,
war rhinos
or something like that. It was I'm trying to think, time traveling robots,
space zombies.
A royal undead or something like that.
Okay, so you had words and adjectives
to work with. And that's just like the first thing, the first thing somebody says, like time traveling robots. But if you've delved into the lore of the Hive, if you've read your books, if you will, if you've poured through that grimoire, you understand that we've fleshed out. The writing team comes in and they add volumes of context and detail to these things later, which is why, to Barrett's point earlier, we have placeholder names for these things. And then the writing team comes in and they sort of unify it as part of the same world, as part of the same franchise. But you got to take baby steps. You got to start somewhere. And that's what this is all about.
I think that tends to kind of summarize where we do a lot of our concept work or a lot of our even gameplay, I would say. Like, we know how we want something to feel, like what our target is. Like, we want them to feel like these you know, time traveling robots, and we have a certain idea in our head, and then we work sort of backwards from there and work out the details that support that feeling, so we don't lose track of where we were originally trying to come across, as opposed to saying starting, you know, with writing a whole backstory and then trying to figure out what that might look like. So we almost tend to work
very viscerally. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, and then every once in a while somebody says Red Death.
Right. Sure.
Design a weapon for me that looks like Red Death, because I really just want a weapon in our game to have the name Red Death. Like, I remember that story was told to me, and
sure,
I was like,
yeah,
it's the goodest place to start as any.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Cool. There we go. Yeah.
But now it's a little more fleshed out. You have a clearer picture.
And this is the combatants, you know, the Vex, the versions that you saw in the future and the in the past and the in the Vault of Glass. And so, mm-hmm. You know, we wanted to have distinct style that could kind of communicate, you know, a difference in, you know, time period for them. So, I mean, I'll just flip back and forth real quick, but you can see the difference between the sleek kind of futuristic look and the, you know, something that looks a little more aged. So we're looking at material, we're looking at designs, the overall shape language, you know, to kind of
like
tell
that
story.
Cool. You're right, it's kind of like retro.
A little bit off topic, but the sound design, obviously, as soon as I see these images, I get these.
You can hear the Vex.
Yeah, I can hear
the
Vex
sound
in my mind.
And see the animation.
Yeah, especially thinking, Vault and all that stuff. Is there any sort of, you know, feeling that goes into that when you're looking at the concept going, these enemies are going to sound a certain way and move a certain way? And
did you watch the Audio Team Vidoc that we released? It was last year, but there's a great portion where you see them go into an industrial plant, and there's all these heavy machinery, you know, and these big mechanical, like,
sounds.
Pieces that move back and forth. And they were recording a lot of those sounds. And then, of course, obviously, you know, they come back and that stuff gets modulated and layered on with all sorts of different effects. But, I mean, obviously they're mechanical in nature. So in terms of the inspirations or, you know, in terms of specific direction, do you give the audio team cues based on your art?
I think we talk about some of the ideas behind them, you know, like, for example, that, you know, they're time traveling, or we don't want them to, you know, just be purely machines, like they actually have some biological elements, or they have a fluid inside them, you know, which is their, you know, their weak spot. And so we talk about some of those ideas about, you know, their early inception and, you know, what we were thinking with the concept, and then they'll, you know, take that and kind of work with it, and you know, take their own spin on it. But, you know, that team does an incredible job.
They do,
give
them the
bringing
freedom.
Those characters alive for sure.
Give them the freedom to discover and iterate. I remember Luke Smith telling an interesting story about, you know, there are so many audio cues that are important player feedback in the Vault of Glass. When you think about playing through that first raid, there are so many things where it would listen, okay, that means we have to do this or that, you know, like even like, you know, the oracles and stuff. And I remember Luke telling me that, you know, he goes to somebody and he says, okay, here's what I want to accomplish. Here's what I want to have happen to the player. So do the good version of this, you know, and you basically state your goal. You state what you want to have happen and then say, go do whatever you want to do because you're good at what you do and I'm good at what I do. And that's one of the really interesting things about Bungie is the specialists, you know, the people that just to, you know, listen to people talk about the very specific things that they contribute to, you know, the all-up creative process.
It just made me, I was just thinking about the early Vex concepts, and we had explored the Vex having a tail. I mentioned that earlier, and, like, that was something that actually took some internal conversation. Like, people were like, robots don't have tails? What are you talking about? And, you know, it was important to, you know, selling the idea that these weren't just machines. These were creatures.
Yeah.
These had backstory. They had lore. They had you know, fiction that was deeper than that, and so they were creatures. They were real characters that had a whole society behind them. And so
Dinobots have tails.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Grimlocks have tails.
Wait, one of the versions did get a tail in the end, didn't it?
Vex.
Yeah, I swore I remembered seeing one with a tail. Maybe I'm imagining it at this point.
Yeah, hobgoblins have tail, don't they?
Now that we've seen it, it just makes sense.
I think hobgoblins have tail. But anyway, the harpies also, you know, they flail out with those different, you
That's
know,
what I'm thinking
pieces.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the harpies.
Tendrils.
That was the closest to. Oh, that was the worst sound ever when those things are about to explode.
Yeah, when they see you.
Like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
So enough about the Vex.
Yep.
Up next,
with the ball.
Oh, man. Whoa. These seems like a lot of variation here.
This is just a silhouette, right?
Yeah, this is just an early study of different shapes. You know, trying to get the big thunderous, you know, heavy armor quality that that was important for the Cabal. And so these are just different ways that that could play out. When you see even some big riot-looking shields and stuff at this point early in the concept. The
phalanx.
Yeah, the phalanx. Which
you called these guys the Empire at the time, huh? It says Empire Soldier at the top of that concept.
Does it?
Oh,
does.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to clip it out, but then I thought, ah, that's an interesting story.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, I think many of the races had different, you know, variation. We went through different names for them along the way, but they all kind of have a similar vibe. It's like, they were meant to be the most technologically advanced of the races. They had a big galactic civilization from beyond the stars and were coming here in their massive warships.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Empire, Cabal, you know, Imperial, you know.
They're all the professional military.
Yeah, exactly.
They're spoiled. That's what you're saying. They're spoiled.
Yeah.
They had all the good stuff. Why the poor fallen.
Yeah.
Had to play around in a field of rusty cars and pick stuff up.
And so, did you? Oh, Chris, did I go too early to the?
Is this the rhino?
Yeah,
that's very rhino-ish.
I love this.
This is a concept artist that's taking so the direction maybe a little too literally, or having a little fun with it. Just having a little fun with it. You can see a little bird on the shoulder.
So it's this perfect.
One, yeah, it's awesome. I love this one.
It's like almost more like a jungle creature. Yeah,
ship it. I want to see it in game.
It's cool to see like some of these other ideas. It's still got that big charging element, you know.
But then there's something about this model that makes it seem like if that was running after you, it would not. She could not catch you. Look how little its legs are.
Yep.
Have you played against the Cabal, Sean?
It would
definitely
be,
will get after you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The ones that are in the game, but this looks like it would waddle after.
They don't. But they don't. They don't run. They jump.
Jump. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Exactly. They got the jump jets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now this next concept is not safe for work. So if you have any of your younger audience members, they should just like minimize their screen window and just listen.
I'm sure they will.
All right, go ahead.
Parents at home listening, like good.
Fine. What do you-
So this is the Cabal without their armor on. When they're sitting in their oil baths or whatever they do.
Their birthday
it's like
suit.
A mutant frog.
Ugly little buggers.
Yeah, chilling in their siege tanks.
Yeah. But I mean, it's important for us when we're doing concept to understand what they do look like underneath their armor so that we can, make sure that, we just understand everything we can about the characters. So, this is taking the idea of a rhino, you know, where we started and kind of making it something unique that had a unique language and a unique face that was, that was specific to Destiny.
Mm. Cool.
But it still captures that beastly, kind of heavy, language that a rhino does.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's dress him up.
Yep.
There we go. Much better.
Teeth.
My favorite thing about this is the, what are those, like, those little pips that he has on his, are those, like, kills that he made, or is that a rank insignia?
Something like that. Yeah. I don't know. How many baths he's taken
reminds
this century?
Or not Rex.
This armor is very clean, I guess, compared to the red sets that we see in game. When did you decide to change it up a little bit?
You were just saying like the Cabal armor is more dingy or dirty. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like they've actually seen battle when we fight them in game. Is this just like what they would look like if they were at a ceremony or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is when they first. Yeah, when they first get their suits.
Straight out of boot camp.
Yeah.
Fresh. Look at these cadets. Oh man.
Once you're on Mars for 20 years, they tend to get dinged up a little bit and covered in oil, that kind of thing.
The dude on the right smiling.
It reminds. Yeah. It reminds me.
All right, get ready for your photo. Yeah.
It reminds me of Gordon Freeman's armor a little bit from Half-Life. Yeah?
You of Gordon Freeman.
No,
it's kind of that orange symbol down below too.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Figured it. Wishful thinking, Sean is.
Yeah.
So this is just another study of the Cabal, kind of exploring different ideas of their armor, but getting across the military insignia on their shoulder, the key thing that you see throughout the different explorations, even from the very early, the black and white sketches that I showed a minute ago, is they all have that, you almost don't see the distinction between their shoulders and their head. Like, it's almost like a giant beetle or a giant, we wanted to make sure that that silhouette was very distinct and clear, kind of sold the idea of them in this hulking armor, this just massive bulk that's kind of charging at you.
And then we move along to We've Awoken the Hive.
Oh, wow.
Awoken the Hive. Favorite baddie. Ooh.
That looks so
That's
cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Different.
It's like
so different than the
red. Yeah, it's like an infrared. It's not like a silhouette, really. That's cool.
This was trying to make, something that felt more, godlike, spectral, worthy of a boss to, fight. How do we take the look and feel of a knight and like dial it up by 1,000 and make it look like it's imbued with the power of ancient, magics, I guess.
I think we all have that one enemy in Destiny where when it shows up, you stop everything you're doing, you pull your heavy. Yeah. You load it up and you're like, I want this dead first next. And this next concept is what it is for me. Anytime the wizards show up and it's like, I'm stopping everything I'm doing. Everyone can take a minute because I need to get this off the, maybe it's like flashbacks or emotional scars from that Prison of Elders stream. I don't know, but.
it was grinding Omnigul
to get
grass. Yeah.
On the dress there, it almost looks like it has other, tendrils or something.
Look at a tattered dress, I think, is all you see. You're seeing the blood, maybe? Is that supposed to be blood or just?
Or red paint, I think.
Okay. Yeah. The look of paint savage.
Hit our target rating.
It's
tie-dye. It's space tie-dye. Yeah.
It's just Fiesta.
I see.
I think... this was just, similarly to the other one, how do we take the base, wizard character and, dial it up and make it something that feels like a unique character or a unique named character with more intricate armor that stands out from the other one. Yeah.
So I've always wondered if, and you said you study the anatomy, if they were to land on the ground, do they have legs under there? Or is it like they're just floating torso?
The early versions of them did have legs and feet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I just thought it was like cool and kind of creepy to have the more billowy, wispy, dress or, a cloak hanging. I think they probably have legs under there. Yeah.
Probably.
Almost like a genie, goes into, magic or something like that.
Yeah. They can use them if they need them, I see. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, where's the concept art of the wizards just kind of chilling, like sitting down, like, chilling oh, another day.
Yeah.
Yep.
On the dreadnought.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, whoa. Cool.
That guy.
Awesome.
Dad.
Dad.
Yeah. So there's Oryx. It was, again, here it's really important to come up with a unique, shape and shape language. I'm playing off of a knight, I think, but like, what is the biggest, baddest, most awful, knight, look like? And so giving him a giant sword and having this huge billowing cloak and, a really iconic headdress was important. The other thing we were playing with, which you can see from the back, is there's this lore with the hive that's sort of wrapped up with moths and worms and stuff like that, sort of the insect side of them. And so we were exploring and looking at moth wings and the cool intricate designs that are on the back, on moth wings, and bringing that into the design of Oryx's cloak. So you see
that's
that here.
That's super cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, awesome. Is that part of the head shape, like a wings shape? Is that the inspiration or it's just...
A little bit, yeah. I mean, just all of those insectoid kind of qualities are references.
Mantis head.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I always saw a crown. I mean, he is the Taken King after all. Yeah. So I just saw the ornate. It's like the worse the enemies get, the bigger their heads.
Yeah, exactly.
Expand.
Yep.
Destiny 2 final boss, just a giant head.
Yeah, floating head.
Yep.
Zordon.
Next up we have... an Iron Lord. This is from a mutated Iron Lord. Most recently from Rise of Iron. So,
Steve will mess you up.
It will.
Yikes.
So we're about halfway through this.
Yep.
Oh wow.
Oh wow. Yeah.
This is only half.
Let you guys keep driving.
So
then.
We should probably take more of a sprint through the world art because we've got a lot of world art, and we know you guys have other things that you need to talk about. And we got Vidja games to make upstairs, so we're going to take a running tour through the worlds of Destiny.
All right,
for the rest of our time with you.
Cool. Got it.
World
building better worlds. So you'd asked before, what was the code name? Mm. We have Project Destiny, but when we were out in the wild at lunch or shopping for things, we were instructed to call it Project Tiger. Mm-hmm. So it was Tiger this and Tiger that, and. This was a portion of...
This is the version without the tiger in it.
This is the version without the tiger in it. But this,
which does not help your point
whatsoever. No, it does not. It does not at all. But there was a version of this painting that had a tiger in it. And this was, I think, what I was told the first time people kind of looked at a piece of concept art and said, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's where we want to go. That's what we want to make.
Yep. So this was bringing together all of the elements that we knew we wanted. So landing on a strange planet with a group of friends staring off into the distance for a possible adventure. You have a mixture of, sci-fi elements and fantasy. So you have the cloak or cape that's drenched over the guy's shoulder that has a royal crest on it. That you have a ship, the personal ship in the back, players would also have and use to land and might have their gear in it. And so that was kind of summing all of that up into, really capturing what we wanted Destiny to feel like. And the other version, which we don't have here, which I think you can find online probably, or we had in the Art of Destiny book, I think it's in there, they had a version of a white tiger. And the point there was really just we wanted Destiny to be a world that you could have a pet or a tiger, or something that could exist. And so, that was the, that became the code name for the project prior to Destiny.
And then we also, I remember this very vividly from the GDC presentation that you gave. At different explorations of what the Traveler was and what does the Traveler look like.
Yeah, that went through many, many different versions. So at one point it was like a big spaceship. How was it, there are versions where it was like right down on Earth, ones that were more in space. And so, we really just wanted something that felt big and iconic, we landed on the spherical shape, pretty late. I mean, it took a lot of different iterations, but once we kind of saw the simple iconic nature, of the spherical shape, it kind of hit on it for us. And then you see because it kind of evokes the quality of a moon or, I think that's one element of it that's really cool. But it also, there's something perfect about a sphere that is cool as well. It
almost looks like an egg in a nest there.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It hatched itself.
That's cool.
Yeah. And the next concept shows some of the earlier visions of the fact that mankind builds a city underneath this. Mm-hmm. And I remember some of the early discussions about like the concentric rings of the walls having been rebuilt and reformed over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, under the safety of the Traveler.
Under the safety of the Traveler. And then one of our first views of the actual wall on the tower.
Yep.
Home to every guardian.
That looks familiar.
The wall. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's some explorations here, a couple different ones of what the actual tower looks like. So this is
that seems pretty dead on.
Yeah, no. So yeah, the next one shows a different variation of it. But yeah, this is the where the tower ended up from the back view. I think you see this in the one of the opening cinematic, one of the first early cinematics in Destiny. And this is just a different version here, where it was a little more open, a little more exposed.
That's awesome.
Interesting.
And then once you get up inside the tower,
there we go.
Yeah, we all remember the speakers.
Speakers.
Apparatus.
Measuring device. Or whatever.
Measuring device.
Yeah. Wars and such.
He used it to make emblems.
This was one of those things that one of our concept artists, Jesse, who's incredibly talented, he actually just to build the idea of the concept, he went into 3D and built this entire thing and, you know, did all of the animation for it. And it's like one of the most, complicated, like, rigs that, you know, like, we had to get, like, technical artists to come understand what he had done. Like, he had built this crazy contraption. And so it was just one of those moments where, you know, one of the concept artists just had this cool idea that he wanted to see in the game, and he built it, and then that ended up being part of the game world. And so we have to have that in the game. So
yeah.
That was fun.
So this next piece has been floating around the studio for a long time. It took us a long time to finally get wolves in the game. But for the longest time, people in the studio are like, oh, I want to have pet wolves just chilling in the tower. And finally, I don't know if that's intended to be Lord Saladin, but you can see a lot of the elements there, like, you know, sort of the fur throw over his shoulders and chilling with his bros there, his canine bros.
Next slide, we'll look at the beards.
this speaks to the, you know, the always trying to play that mixture of, you know, sci-fi and fantasy. And I think, you know, there's something cool about, you know, someone sitting on a more sci-fi throne with a, you know, a pack of wolves around them.
Nature.
This is a shot of what it might look like in the city, the last city itself, like down below, beneath the tower. You know, where you have these kind of old feeling buildings. You have this strange, you know, skybox in the distance. But you have people with, you know, you have the feeling of an old market, you know, but it's in the future. It's sort of that, slightly apocalyptic, slightly, but still hopeful at the same time. There's people, there's community, there's people selling stuff.
Something to fight for.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily comes from a place of wanting to send the player to that environment, but just for our own purposes, to understand what is this moment in time for humanity? What are we fighting to defend? Mm-hmm. You know, looking at the world that we're building from every different angle so that as we build it out, it makes sense to itself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then this next one really speaks to the essential player experience. There's treasure, there's guns, there's mystery, there's intrigue.
Yep.
What else were you looking to convey with this?
So, like, in any good game, you want stuff to get and buy and collect and all that stuff. And so Destiny needed the equivalent of gold. Like, what was gold going to be? Like, what was the currency? What was the thing you were going to bust open the, you know, giant hive wizards, you know, doors and find its treasure trove? What was going to be in there? And so this was the first shot where we kind of tried to take all of those elements and put them together. And, you know, so you have the glowing gems that are, you know, like, that feel like gold. Like, you want to, like, run over and scoop those up because they look valuable and magical. But also, like, you know, different artifacts and weapons and, you know, strange things that the aliens had collected that had powers imbued with them. So, you know, figuring out what loot looked like in Destiny was super important.
As gamers, we do love shiny objects.
Yep. And so this is just another example of just, you know, making, you know, we wanted to, you know, what does a treasure room in Destiny look like? And so this was a exploration of that.
Very early on.
Yeah. This is prior to the gold being blue. So, you know, this is literal gold. Imagine this with glowing gems and you have something similar to the Prison of Elders. The gold
treasure room
at the end. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Is this piece Charlemagne's Vault? Is that the name of this piece of art? I thought that's what it was referred to way back.
And this was, you know, our earliest explorations of, you know, the feel. I mean, you look at those characters and you think those feel like guardians to you. This wasn't really representative of the player experience. This was more us trying to figure out in what world will this game take place. And this is always an interesting conversation with our community when we open up our reams of art, because a lot of times if you daydream out loud, if you, you know, sort of show your aspirations to people, you know, they can be taken as promises. But we do like to, you know, socialize, you know, the players who are really invested in the creativity and the art. We like to welcome them into our process and show them this is how we think and this is how we work. So, you know, from time to time, it makes the expectation setting game a little interesting, but this is how you make a game, is you dream big and then you scale it onto a disc.
Yeah. I mean, this was, like you said, this isn't any real location in the game. It really was. What would it feel like with a group of friends who had guns and assault rifles or whatever, busting down the door and going into a room filled with gold and treasures. Like, does that feel right? Is that, and you know, very quickly we were like, that feels awesome. That is the game we want to make.
And the closest you can get to this in game, I mean, I think we did get here with Prison of Elders, or we did get here with The Lighthouse to a certain extent. And that's the thing about a concept artist's life is the things that they create may take years to actually make it into a build of the game. And we knew that we were going to be expanding this adventure out over the course of many different iterations, many different expansions, and some other things that Destin's trying to get, going to try to get us to answer questions about. So when we leave the relative safety of the tower and we go out into the wild, we can see obviously sort of the bones or the seeds of the Cosmodrome here.
Yeah, some old war machines that are covered in grass and rusted, and so one of the I think you mentioned it earlier, but the nature ascendant over humanity was kind of a defining kind of pillar for us as far as a thematic statement relics, history had moved on, and like stuff from our past, nature had kind of taken them back over, whether it's buildings or old war machines that, you know, people might not even know what they were, for or whatever. Warlocks might have, stories about, how these things used to be used in old wars or something before the collapse. But that was sort of an important, feel and apocalyptic, the apocalyptic aesthetic can, vary. Like sometimes it can be very grim and gray and kind of dark. And this was us wanting to make sure it felt beautiful. At the same time, and so there was, grass and blue skies and all of that on Happy top birds. Of the rust and the decay. So,
this is a little bit more grim. This is an interesting shot for me because the collapse of the Golden Age wasn't just all about our gadgets and our buildings going dark. Like the oceans receded, the continents shifted, the planet completely changed after the collapse of the Golden Age, which thematically kind of frees us up from having to be very literal about where things are happening, because where isn't even really a constant anymore.
Yeah, and we wanted to make sure, these explorations of different places we potentially could go were interesting and surprising. And so when you put a ship in the middle of a desert, like there's a story there, like what happened? How did that get there? What happened to the earth? What happened to that ship? What is inside there? I want to find out. So this is just us exploring those juxtapositions.
That's again something that in Rise of Iron you get to go inside that ship, but it took us a while to get there.
Yep. So here we have an exploration of the moon, the moon base, and the Hive having, having a giant ship that's landed or crashed on the moon. And so we actually took this version and ended up burying it in the ground. We thought that would be pretty cool if the Hive were actually had built an empire or starting to build a new kingdom under the moon, and you didn't see it at first. Like you first landed on the moon and you saw the remnants of the the Golden Age and some of the buildings that humans had built, and then slowly we reveal this. So like we reveal the Hellmouth and we see that they're building underneath, and so we thought that was a cooler reveal.
Better a hell mouth than a hell tunnel, I think.
Hellmouth is very cool, cool name, cool execution.
Yep.
And then we'll leave the moon and we'll go to Venus.
This is the shot you were talking about earlier, I think.
Wow.
Rounding the corner and seeing the catch.
That sense of scale.
And the blue lava. The blue lava, just to let you know, you're not in Kansas anymore.
So inside the caldera. The volcano, the big volcano.
And there's interesting juxtapositions where you have fallen architecture, or at least fallen geometry on Venus, and then the next concept is Vex. So even though the planet is alien, there's even further alien influences on that planet.
That Vex architecture looks so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, we really wanted to get across the feel of, like, almost that they built, like, what... if ants were machines, what kind of things would they build? Yeah. So they just build these like huge, you know, strange sculptural kind of ant hills out of blocks. Like, yeah. So, you know, kind of combining all of those different ideas
ant
together.
Colonies. It does remind me actually, have you seen those things where like they'll pour like molten lead into an ant colony?
Oh, yeah.
And then dig in and pull pull this weird structure out. It actually looks a lot like that.
Do they warn the ants first? Wow. Do they?
Like, no.
They don't?
They don't give them an eviction notice or anything. They're just like, here you go. It's going to be hot. Coming in hot, you little bastards.
So mean.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's us. It's amazing the traveler picked us sometimes, isn't it?
Anyway, so. Yeah, this is another shot of exploring the atmosphere, the color, the tone of of Venus.
And the trench work there, maybe some early ideas that led to Black Garden imagery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same thing here, just exploring what's the foliage like, what does the sky feel like?
Yeah.
How do we make it alien but still relatable and still, I think generally the direction we took with most of the planets, certainly the inner planets that you go to, is, you know, there's sort of ideas in pop culture from, you know, whether it's books, you know, pulp science fiction books in the, you know, early days, you know, stuff like that. We wanted to play on some of those ideas, that players or people might have already, and kind of dial them up.
Venus is green, Mars is red.
Yeah, exactly. Or there might, you know, are there swamps and, you know, forests? Were there once, you know, forests on Venus or, you know, that kind of thing. Big red sand dunes and stuff like that. So.
And then the Academy.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we really wanted to make this sell the idea of this was a place of, you know, human learning. And so what better way to do that than a massive, you know, library filled with a million Golden Age books. But the Fallen came in and destroyed it.
Bastards. And then this next, to a seasoned Destiny veteran, this needs no introduction.
Is this the entrance to the Prison of Elders?
This is the entrance to the Vault of Glass.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. It's a lot bigger.
It's circular, yeah. I said vault. So well, all that ornateness in the center and just the bottom, you know.
Yep, this is the one that has all the different,
iconic.
Like, rotating plates
wrong.
That open up.
I thought it was a lot smaller than
it
is.
Everybody else just saw a door in a hallway. It's all about that door. The vault door is so cool. I mean, it's so ornate and iconic, to your point.
Oh, yeah, it's a little neat.
Yeah. But, yeah, this is different than it turned out. Yeah, that was in, like, the side of, I don't know, looks like maybe a building, whereas it ended up in the side of, a mountain or something.
Yep. And then we arrive finally at Mars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. This is vastly different.
Yeah. But yeah, we went through a lot of different iteration of, you know, color palette and tone, and what are the structures look like there. And this is one of the early takes.
Heavy industry. Mm-hmm. That looks like Doom concept art almost.
Yeah,
just about.
But the next concept, I think you'll definitely recognize the buried city in this next concept. So that's the Mars and Destiny that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can see the broken biodomes. You can see skyscrapers reaching up out of the sand. This was, personally, always one of my favorite destination, just because, you know, before Sparrow Racing, this was the best place to go do Sparrow tricks off the dunes.
And
And you just had this naturally formed, you know, ring. You could just drive all the way around again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sense of scale on Mars was such a big piece of that, because you could see so far, and it was huge, too. It was just huge.
I love the idea of, you know, a city buried in sand that you get to go in and explore. I mean, that's such a cool fantasy. I think that's Mars is one of my favorites for that reason. Cool. And then we switch to the Hive.
So is this specifically Dreadnought, or was this just any Hive space?
I think this was Hive architecture. This is what it might be like inside a Hive environment, like where we're kind of selling the feeling of, a tomb, an ancient tomb. Definitely the more fantasy leaning of the races, but we also
reminds me of the big hallway entrance to, like, not Oryx, Crota. you know, yeah, in the dark beginning below, there, where the bridge is.
Beat the bridge.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Running towards
very
the light part there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, this next one, however, feels very much like Dreadnought to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Maybe a touch more organic.
All the different things you can find, yeah.
There are something blooming in the foreground there, and the Dreadnought felt very dead.
Yeah.
Dead for millennia, even, right?
But even with the Hive, we know, like, we wanted to bring, some elements of detail and stuff that was growing to give that organic quality. We didn't want it to just be a metal spaceship or, you know, where elements of their ships almost feel like they're organic or made of bone and, mm-hmm. or, you know, and there's almost barnacles. That kind of cover the spaces, and that's really to kind of evoke the, I think some of the artists make fun of me when I kept telling them, I was like, make it look more underwater, make it look more, yeah, but literally I wanted the Hive to feel like a sunken ship that was slowly floating through space. And so you had, you know, something that had been, buried at sea for thousands of years. It had barnacles growing on it. It had treasure. It had, undead inside it. So they were basically like, underwater, tombs.
Yeah, it's funny that you say it. I never thought of it that way. And now that you say it, I will never unsee that.
Yeah.
Like, it's so perfect. It turned out that way. Like deep sea, the chasms of deep sea. It has that feel.
Like a nightmare Titanic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And so even their ships aren't meant to go fast. Like their ships are just, they move, you know, they live for millions of years. Why bother going, you know, or whatever, the Hive are undead.
Why in such
you
a
know,
hurry?
They're, you know, they don't die. Yeah. So.
Well, that's all the art that we brought.
Wow.
Nice.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's so cool to get a like glimpse back into the old versions and old aesthetics that you guys were thinking of while you were coming up with the game.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And I know the community will be so excited to see this. You know, I know it's many years ago for you guys now, but it's just always awesome to look back at the inspirations and see how much has changed. So thanks for
sharing. Or what hasn't changed.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. the stuff that has not.
Definitely. So while we have you, we have to ask about the future, though. Is there anything you can tell us? So back in February, you said Destiny 2, full sequel, in 2017, anything you can tell us about looking forward?
We're focused on doing amazing things for the players of Destiny to play in the future. There will come a time where we feel like those things are in a place where, they're worthy of showing to you. Until then, you know, I mean, that's who we are. It's sort of like, no, it's not ready yet, not ready yet. You know, I mean, we want to make sure that we're always putting our best foot forward. So we're going to take the time we need. And when we feel like we're ready to do that, we'll put our best foot forward with a swift kick. We'll get there. We'll get there together. But right now, we're just happy to congratulate you guys on 100 episodes. Thank you for keeping such a lively conversation going. And just to sort of share, as we look back across all the adventures we've had playing the game, sort of, you know, invite ourselves into that experience and say, here are some of the adventures that we've had making the game. And it's been a wonderful symbiosis where we create all of these things and the players rush in there and make it their own. And, to show them what we were thinking about years before they even got to go into that world and how we were able to go in there and you know, share these games together was really what we wanted to accomplish today.
Well, hey, it was really a pleasure sitting with you guys and having you take us through your creative process with Destiny. We appreciate it.
Cool.
Chris Barrett's maybe.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
All right. So right now we're actually going to throw it to some people from the community who are taking a look forward about what they want to see with Destiny 2. We'll be right back in just a second.
In Destiny 2, I am genuinely hoping that Bungie invest more heavily in the sort of MMO feel of the game. I basically want a reason to explore the world and actually be in the world and not just, you know, load into it, do my mission, and then get out.
In Destiny 2, I want Bungie to embrace their MMO side a little bit more.
What do I want in Destiny 2? Beards. Guardians to have beards. Space battles would be too.
Let's try to make time to explain. Let's make that story not in the Grimoire. Make it in the game.
Patrols that actually like spread out continent wide. And you can, like, have different outposts to go to? Yeah, that's what I want.
Put the Grimoire in the game, not on my phone, in the game.
In Destiny 2, I'd like to see more emphasis on exploring while in patrol. Oh, and more time to explain.
Make time to explain, please, please.
The thing that I'm looking forward to the most with Destiny 2, definitely new ways to meet new people and meet new friends. Finding a way to make it easier to chat with each other would be super duper awesome.
From Destiny 2, I want to see more cutscenes with our enemies.
I'd like to see more character feature customization.
I want to see dedicated servers.
And I want to see more story narrative.
I just want 60 frames a second.
Expectations are super high for Destiny 2, so at the top of my wish list is a story that's more coherent this time around.
And I would like to hear more about Osiris and more about the trials of Osiris.
I'd like to see one playlist that's ranked and you know what you're getting into, and then another one where you can go in and just kind of let your hair down and have a little bit of fun.
What I want for Destiny 2 is a ranked playlist in the Crucible. You give me a reason to keep playing the Crucible and something to work towards, I will never stop.
I'm looking forward to a stable game in Destiny 2 with some awesome networking, a full environment, like cool stuff that you can see on possibly an in-game map.
One, I'm hoping that there is map voting similar to what we've seen in previous Halos. Number two, I'm hoping that we have rotating spawns in Trials, so that way when one side happens to be advantageous, both teams get to play on that side for half the match.
I think Destiny 2 should have some more riddles to solve or puzzles to crack. I think that'd be really fun, like especially in raids.
Giving Guardians the tools to create their own fate, drive their own story at their own pace, and becoming more knowledgeable regarding the events of their past. We can't wait to see what's in store for our Guardians and to help share the lore as best we can in the community. Oh, and beards. We want beards.
What do I want for Destiny 2? Just that same awesome feeling I had when I first played this game all the way back in the beta. If they could bring that over to Destiny 2 and just add more, you know, more story, more weaponry, more places to explore, then I'll be very happy.
There's two things that come to mind. First would be a widened player base on PC. I'd love to see even better graphic quality in Destiny 2. My second, probably most important wish for Destiny 2 would definitely be more consistent updates and weapon rebalancing.
What I want to see in Destiny 2, real dragons. Not those fake ones up on Venus, which Bungie called Batadactyls. I want real Ahamkara in Destiny 2.
If we get large open world with continuous or more consistent content releases and all that, I would be very, very happy.
As someone who's been playing Destiny since day one, something that I'd really like to see come alive in Destiny 2 is the storytelling aspect. Bungie has such a beautiful way of writing the lore that I'd really like to see the gameplay and storyline become totally integrated in the next installation.
So answering the question, what do I want in Destiny 2? I mean, I think in a technical aspect, a lot of us want to see, you know, dedicated servers, 60 frames per second, just to...
I think what I want in Destiny 2 the most is just way more PvE content. I absolutely love everything we have so far, especially the raids, and I can't wait to see that expanded upon.
First and foremost, a compelling and dynamic storyline. The second would be a PvP arena that could take competitive shooting to a whole new level with limitless options for creating inventive and memorable playstyles.
I'm really excited for Destiny 2, and I can't wait to see what they bring us. I hope it's even bigger and better than the first.
That's what the community is asking for in Destiny 2. We've had this conversation many times on this show, so we've actually linked to some of those in the description below. Right now, though, we're instead going to take a look back at some of our favorite memories throughout the lifespan of Destiny and talk about why those moments that we're going to show you were special. CJ, what is your favorite memory?
Take a guess.
Oh, I know.
Gee, it's
something where you're sweaty, right?
Yeah, exactly. The sweats. Trials of Osiris. May 22nd, 2015, I believe, is the official Trials of Osiris date. That's what it was.
8:37 p.m.
Yeah, exactly the minute. It was I think it was 10 a.m. launch again. Like, and it's crazy because just thinking of the game without Trials, House of Wolves was amazing, but Trials came out of that, and that is incredible. So, I mean, you're right there with me. I know, Fran, you played a lot of Trials.
No, I mean, you really – actually, you struck a chord when you said that because I was like – when it first launched, I actually didn't play that much Trials, and I played mostly Prison at the time. And now it's like, wait, if they didn't have trials in that update, what would my life be like right now? Because I play a ton every weekend.
You'd have much more time. Yeah. But I mean, and it's good. Like you, the community wise, we talk about the various aspects of the trials community and PvP and PvE, but PvP has kind of been now where a lot of the legs of the game have gone because the PvE stuff's old. So, this moment that I'm specifically going to show and talk about, it was another classic trials moment. Somehow, it obviously goes down to a 4v4, the last round in, you know, the ninth, if you're about to get the last. You just, you envision, like, the yellow circle versus the red dot, and you're just holding on. And so, it was actually Fran, Michael, Lovebree, and I. It was not that long ago. Yeah, backpack. We have a bunch of various team names for each of the teams I have that fail at trials. There's Broken Dreams. There's
Shattered Dreams.
Shattered Dreams. That's me, Steven, and Fran. Then there's Mended Dreams. That's me, you, and Michael.
Oh, so, I didn't even know.
Yeah, that's because we made it. You know, we finally made it. But there was a final round. We were basically going back and forth, and we had probably came back from, you know, 4-1, about 4 or 5 rounds in this card. And sometimes you do those cards and you're like, this feels great, it's all good. This one felt terrible. Yeah. It's like,
we were
going to end
by
in disappointment. The very last round, I'm a hunter. I get lots of grief for being the quiver hunter. A lot of people just go like, hey, just go black hole, stop it with this quiver nonsense.
Yeah.
Anyways, long story short, we were all coming up at the very end where we're, you know, okay, here we go. We're jumping up all the same time.
Yeah, we came up from 4-1.
Came back from
Mercy
4-1.
Was gone.
Gone. And we're like, let's do this. And we know they had a bunch of supers. We didn't have any. I just got my quiver and time's running down. I'm like, all right, let's do this. I don't want to not go to the lighthouse after spending an hour and a half. We jump up in the actual video. You can see me and the hunter on the opposite team, like tethering at the same time. Mm-hmm. And as we went up, Fran's like, oh my God, I'm tethered. get him. And Mike's like, oh, I'm tethered too. And I'm like, oh guys, I just direct impacted one of the guys. And I was like, okay, I think I can kill him. So I kill that guy. And then the guy on the other team who got the tether off, I think you killed or Michael killed. But then his teammate was a blade dancer. So then they activated a blade really quick and then killed the two of you. And you guys are then sitting there in the middle of it going, oh man, we're both dead. Yeah. And you have to understand, we'll show you the clip, but this is all in the span of probably about 3 seconds. And I swear, I don't know how it works this way with trials. And it happens every time where it is like time stops. Mm-hmm. And when you win, it's amazing. And when you lose, it's
not
terrible. But anyways, so we won this time. I'll let the clip play out, but still probably one of my most memorable moments in Trials, and it was a pretty cool clip.
Killer.
Okay, I have my super right now. Yeah, I'm going in top mid, okay? I'm going top mid. Let's do it. Get ready to go on the wide. Yeah, they're all here in the middle.
Oh, they tethered. I got hit.
I got direct impact on one of them.
Guardian. Ah! Blade coming for you, Michael. Blade! You're the last guardian. Siege, you gotta clutch it. It's all you. He's almost dead.
Got him.
Oh. Yeah.
Woo!
Let's go.
Yeah. Let's go. Oh.
That is just the dose. Lighthouse you needed, man.
Yeah.
Lighthouse, how does that feel?
Oh my gosh, I was waiting that guy out.
CJ's face right now. Oh. Your mic is so bad.
So right there, I mean, again, feels like yesterday. That was probably one of my most favorite moments in recent trials memories. I mean, we've obviously watched Twitch streams and all that stuff. Destin, I've seen you lose your mind in various other PvP or PvE aspects of the game. Yeah. Specifically, I'm thinking back to when the newest Rise of Iron raid. Was
Iron?
Yeah. Yes. The Iron. The old Iron raid. So I got a group together and we were running through the raid every single week on Tuesday. Stream Tuesdays at 8, so we would stream the raid runs.
The Destin channel.
And twist.tv/Destin channel for the plug. The moment in particular, though, was when we were running through, and they'll have other streams on in the background while we're playing, and they're like, we're in the room with the cube, and nobody knows how to open it yet, and they're like, I think Datto just opened it, and everybody's at the door to transition, and once you go past there, You can't. So literally, I'm like, everybody stop, back it up. So like, we all go back into the room with the cube, and I'm like, we're solving this right now. And we sat there and we solved the puzzle over a matter of time. We figured out where you had to stand. Like, it was a combination of Reddit and Datto and all these other streamers who were kind of figuring it out at the same time.
Right, everybody was like doing it at the same time.
And I was there for that moment of like, okay, this person figured out this part and this person figured out that part. And it was just so fantastic. And I lose my mind when the thing opened because it had been like a month. Yeah. It was like a month and nobody had solved it yet.
It was a huge
and I was there for the second it was being solved. It was just a phenomenal experience. Did you guys open the cube? You've done that.
Yeah, so I did. Yeah. So yeah, my experience was after yours, but I remember thinking, okay, I watched Destin and nothing will top his screaming in the middle of it when you did it. It was very cool.
Well, your reward was Outbreak Prime, right?
Yeah. At the time, Outbreak Prime was just like this fantastic pulse rifle.
Killer.
Yeah. It was
really cool. The Rage, just an awesome weapon, but it's just solving that. Yeah. I hadn't seen something like that in Destiny, even with all of its stuff like Sleeper Simulant and all that. This one was huge, you know. I remember it was like midnight too, and there was like a group of streamers up, like trying to solve it.
Oh, there also just hadn't been a deeply rooted mystery like that in any of the other raids. Like, there's always been little secrets here and there, but like, this was something like, we know it's here. No one's figured it out yet. And then all of a sudden, all these different people are figuring out different pieces of the puzzle at the same time. Like, that's an special thing.
There was like an ARG where like you had to figure out your cube. Like, Reddit had this whole thread about like how they figured out which cylinders you have to stand on to open it, basically.
It's still difficult to understand.
Yeah,
like, even when you still go through it. Yeah,
like, you have to translate binary into a number, and that lets you know the row and the column you need to stand in. Yeah. It was so layered. And then after you solve it, you actually still have to decode to get the Outbreak Prime. It's seriously just a super cool moment, and I hope everybody watching got to experience it. Here was my reaction.
Did we do it?
It hasn't lit up yet.
Give it a second.
There we go.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Oh my god! Everybody, it's open! It's open! Get in, find the monitor!
I'm coming, guys!
No, I died! Not now! Damn you, Titan Jump!
Oh my god!
This is so cool! This is so freaking cool!
Sean, going back further, you have a moment. You struggle with it at first, but you finally solved it.
Yeah, well, so mine is when we first completed level 35 Prison of Elders. At the time, it was the hardest PvE content in the game. And this is after it was adjusted for the burns, like working as intended, as we talk about. Ugh. But I still like proudly use the ship because I think that that's like an indication of that was the hardest content in the game. And I love showing off that I did that back in the day, which is super cool. Special for this event was like we did it on stream, and that was something really cool because I don't know, it was kind of weird. It came at a time when like we didn't really know if people were still interested in Destiny, but this was the hardest PvE content in the game. We thought like this is something people want to watch, so they showed up in droves. There were a bunch of people and a lot of pressure on me to get this done.
You had to do it.
There were no checkpoints at this time either, so like even just dying sort of in the initial couple rounds up getting to the end was difficult. But I remember, and I was doing it with a fire team of Stan, HCA, and Sydney, who are both great people. But Stan's he's a great kid and he's a smart guy. But you're never really sure if he heard what you were saying to him, because you'd be like, Stan, grab this thing, and he just won't respond. And then you're like,
is he doing
Stan?
It?
And he heard you. He totally did. Yeah. But just like,
just going through it.
Yeah. He's, I don't know. He just sometimes won't respond.
Gotta
and
have faith.
This is an encounter that is so taxing on your communication, because you're not only avoiding the ads and Skolas while running around the map, but you're passing around this poison that you have to time in a perfect way, or else it'll kill you instantly.
Yeah.
Right. And you need the right comp. Like, at the time, we figured out you need a self-res because that's lifesaver.
Yep.
Hunters that can invis are great for resing. You need one of those. And then, obviously, Titan Bubbles are great for just setting up in a corner and killing all these ads. You can see that when we finally completed it, it had taken so much energy out of me. I didn't even really celebrate. I was kind of just like, oh, my God, we did it. Thank you. I just want to go to sleep now.
Yeah.
And Jose, who was my co-pilot on the stream, is actually the more excited guy. He was like, dude, you did it, man. And I was like, we did it, dude. Like, it kind of awesome. Took a second to hit me. You know how Destiny can be when you're in there for a couple of hours, like,
yeah, a couple.
Working to get that yeah, done, and then generous. You finally do it. It's less like a celebratory thing and more like a thank God that's over type yeah. thing, and that's my moment on the stream. But it's the achievement of doing the hardest thing in the game. You can see it written all over my face. So that's what this clip is. So take a look.
So what's left? How much do we have?
You burned the self. That's fine.
Just burn Skolas.
Do we have essences right now?
You still will. You will. Okay. I had it on me.
Oh, got it. I have it now.
Where Sean, is Skolas? Let me know and I'll take it from you.
Okay. Oh, he's low. Let's put some damage on him. Come on.
And put it in the books, because this one is done. Congratulations. Very nice. Sean, Stan, and Sydney. Nice work.
We did it.
Going in.
Yes.
Yeah, 19 minutes left on the stream, and you come through. I saw the blood in your eyes when you saw that he was down to like 2% health.
I didn't know he was that low. I thought we were
I had
that was a nice surprise.
Yeah.
I had 20 galleys to fire.
20 galleys just to make sure he stays down. That's right. Nice work.
Thank you. That was awesome.
So yeah, you can definitely see the emotion written, or lack thereof, written on my face. But that's my moment. Fran, what about you? What's your favorite moment?
The best for last, I guess. No, you know, the truth is some of my very best moments, I was not streaming at the time. I don't have the footage. I always reference Vault of Glass when I got this crazy hard drop, tried forever, similar story. However, I do think my moment is more of the one at large, which was year two when Taken King came out in King's Fall. That was the first blind raid that I did, because before it was hard for me to find time. Yeah, and so like Vault, somebody walked me through it, and you're like, people are like pressuring you to do things, and you're just like, what is going on?
Get the cleanse!
As much as I played tons of Vault. So with Taken King, that was the first time that a bunch of IGN folks got together, and we just blind went through it. It took us 13 to 15 hours. I mean, just amazing. And I don't have that footage.
Wow.
However, where this story leads, which I do think represents Destiny and what it stands for and what we're doing here today, I ended up like just meeting some more people through trials, but then also with getting more raid help on Raid Hard. And that was the group that I play with most today, actually, which is like Click It and Chronic and Toxic and Arcane and Michael Lovebury, who, you know, played with Michael, and King is another guy we play with. And I'm sure I'm forgetting other people I've joined, but this is now a group I play with and talk to on my PS Messages app all the time. So anyway, the footage that, you know, you'll see playing now is just like, it's us at Golgoroth hard, but like, I spent so much time in there with these guys. Like, we had every Sunday, we had our appointed time that we'd wake up and start playing. And I'm sure in the community, like, you have this, like, you basically
you
have
it out.
Yeah, you have your appointments with each other.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's the famous Fran nap, which we may not have ever talked about. This actually happened during King's Fall. We were trying to finish it, and I told them I would be there at a particular time because we were supposed to finish off Oryx. And, I showed up like an hour late.
And I'm texting Fran. They're like, Fran, okay?
My alarm didn't go off.
Yeah.
So I took the infamous, big sweat.
He was having a nap.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I passed out. I was just
wrecked. And I was talking to him like an hour or two before. He's like, yeah, don't worry, I'll be there. And I'm like, where's Fran? I'm texting him for like an hour or two. So that is the Fran nap.
But basically, though, this moment that you'll see, we'll show a brief clip. It's just the moment at large, like the group together. This was a new group of friends who I've never even met in real life. And, you know, I think that just speaks to how awesome this game and the community has become. And so that's my moment.
All right. Shoot the thing. Got it.
That
sounds
is.
Like sounds like you have a winner.
Yeah.
Golgoroth 2, what a challenge. I remember having we had the most wrong strategy the first night we were in there. We were like running around the room and having him spin all the way around because we thought we had to use every one of the drops.
Yep. Like, just use the front left one.
Yeah, like we kinda had like the main mechanic down, just the passing it back and forth and like getting him to turn.
Yeah.
But then we had this whole other part where it's like, we have to use all the drops, get them to go around a big circle.
Oh, man.
It's a disaster.
I was convinced that you had to do something. Oh, to get the drops to drop on the top of his head. Like, you're going to get him to walk under it and drop the crap on his head. No.
Not at all.
Definitely
wasn't
not
a bad theory.
Guys, thank you so much for sharing those moments and for being on the episode today. Very happy that we made it to episode 100. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode. But before we go, there was one last thing we all wanted to say to the community, and that's thank you. Every single one of you out there is amazing. The Destiny community is by far one of the kindest, most thoughtful, and welcoming that I've ever had the pleasure of being a part of. From me and everyone here at IGN, thank you for everything. We're going to leave you with a montage from other content creators who also wanted to give you their thanks. But until next time, Guardians out!
Hey guys, Bife here. Just wanted to go ahead and leave this message for the guys over on Fireteam Chat. Thank you very much for being another wonderful part of the Destiny community.
Congratulations, Fireteam Chat, on your 100th episode. We look forward to 100 more.
I'd like to congratulate Fireteam Chat on reaching this amazing milestone. And thank you to everyone who has made the Destiny community one of the greatest video game communities on the face of the earth.
The Destiny community means a lot of things to a lot of different people, but to me, it means positivity. I'm so grateful to it because the community helped me through some really rough times in my life, and I'm forever in debt to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Destiny community. You all are truly the best.
Thank you for all the memories in Destiny, and I cannot wait to see what Destiny 2 brings.
Thank you.
I honestly don't know what I would be doing without their support. I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
This community is just awesome, and I'm so happy to be a part of it.
Thank you.
To the Destiny community, I say thank you. You have changed my life, and I've brought people into it that I now call some of my closest friends.
To the entire Destiny community, thank you.
It truly is one of the best communities out there in any game I've ever played.
When Guardians get together, great things happen. Thank you.
The Destiny community is unlike any other. It's amazing. Thank you.
From all of us in the Destiny community, thank you very much.
Thank you so much to you guys. Thank you so much to the Destiny community. The bottom of my heart, you guys are magic and keep on killing it.
This is truly the best community I've ever interacted with. They've changed my life.
This community is remarkable. I am absolutely honored and blessed to be a part of the Destiny community. It is unlike any other gaming community out there.
If I ever have a bad day, I know that I can just turn my stream on and the community will be there to put a smile back on my face. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would consider the Destiny community to be my family. As close, the Destiny community has changed my life, and it means more to me than I think anyone will ever know.
Hey, it's Steph here, and I just wanted to say thank you for this community. I've had the opportunity to meet so many great people like everyone on Fireteam Chat, and I'm looking forward to what the next year will bring.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.